Welcome to It's No Secret, a podcast for Kiwis who want their money questions answered.
Ready, steady, go.
This podcast will answer the money questions you may or may not have on your mind. We'll talk to real Kiwis and share truths about our own financial lives.
Both the successes and the failures. Because the truth is, there is no secret to achieving financial freedom. Hello and welcome to It's No Secret. I'm Kat.
And I'm Christine.
And today on the podcast, we are tackling the question of how do you help your financially illiterate family with preparing for retirement? This might be a controversial topic to be discussed between two women who are in their 20s and 30s and are nowhere near retirement and would equally consider themselves fairly financially literate. However, we are here to tackle the uncomfortable conversations as well as the fun ones. For those of us in adulthood that have a decent relationship with our parents, there comes a time where you suddenly realize your parents don't actually know everything, and chances are you may know some things more than them in certain areas. This, of course, could be anything. My dad studied geology and he knows a lot more about different types of rocks than I ever will. However, I've studied and worked in investing for over 10 years and I arguably know a lot more theoretical information about personal finance than he does. Sure, he has more lived experience than I do, but that's not to say that my experience and knowledge is irrelevant. So when you have this realization and you start to go down your own financial improvement journey, it's natural to think how those around you are doing, particularly with their finances. And when that happens, and you start to realize that perhaps your whānau aren't in the best position for retirement, what should you do? Perhaps they're showing signs of spending beyond their means, or they're struggling with debt, or they haven't really thought about what retirement or finishing work even looks like in the first place. Now, society tells us that we shouldn't engage in these conversations with our whānau because how rude. But if we don't, are we just perpetuating the problem? And I guess what is the mental burden or stress that you then put on yourself as the child or the person around that individual if you don't have these conversations? So before we start sharing some ways that you can have these conversations with those around you, whether they be parents, siblings, cousins, family, broader friends, I thought we'd start a little bit with our lived experience. And to put Christine on the spot here, she doesn't know I'm going to ask her this question. Do you talk to your parents about their money and their retirement?
It's a great question. So for context, my parents are divorced, so I have two, I guess, separate conversations there. My mum and my new stepdad. I talk to my mum about it, not my stepdad as much, and I think that is partially a cultural thing in that Danes typically don't talk to each other about money, and it's kind of a bit of a joke between Peter and I that he thinks it's outrageous that I'm even asking questions, and he has never talked to his kids about money. However, somehow they're quite financially literate, and so with my mum specifically, until she recently had back surgery, I've never spoken to her about whether she is going to be, you know, financially free during retirement. And I think that is partially also because of cultural things, but also because I think so now she's not working and there's a lot kind of tied up with, you know, Peter is the sole income earner and all that kind of stuff. But then once she was going into the surgery, my sister and I got sent her will. And, you know, that was very revealing. Obviously, we got to know how much money she has on everything and who it would go to and who's going to take the lead with the finances, which is Caroline, which I was not impressed by. But so kind of a broad conversation. And then with my dad, he has worked in finance his whole life and he's very open about how much money he has and where it is and what he invests in and all that kind of stuff. But in terms of that will piece, not really. So it's vague, but I just don't know if maybe they think they have a long like timeline left. And so perhaps the reality of retirement or, you know, needing to exercise that will isn't quite there yet. So it's not something that they want to talk to about. But what about you?
So my parents are still together and they are now both retired. Mum retired earlier this year. And we do talk a little bit about money. So part of this was to do with the fact that in Australia you can have a self-managed superannuation fund, which people might be familiar of, and oftentimes they're family super funds. So this was mum and dad's like main source of retirement savings. And for a while there, my brother and I were also part of that plan when we first started working. So we did know, you know, that was probably a good 10 years ago, how much money they had then. We also were fairly open about kind of what their house is worth and if they have a mortgage and those sorts of things. And we do talk about, I guess, the dollar amounts that they have in certain things. And we know, generally speaking, what types of assets they have and like where their money is. But the conversation that we don't have is, do they have enough money for retirement? And how much money are you guys spending? And do you have enough money to keep spending the amount that you currently spend? And what does that look like, given that mum comes from a bloodline that has very long, like, you know, her mum lived until she was 99. So I feel like mum's got a very long lifespan ahead of her. I hope dad does too, of course. But we do know that obviously females live longer, which is why I started with her. So, you know, just things like, well, are they going to have enough money for the next 20 years? We don't really talk about that sort of stuff. We have talked a little bit about investments specifically, particularly since I've kind of worked at Kernel and my parents know that I'm like thinking about that all the time, but as a broader family, not so much. And to be fair, I would probably hazard a guess that I know a lot more about it than say my brother does. If you asked him the same questions, he may not have as much awareness of mum and dad's like financial position. But yeah, and it is a really tricky one. And I think where we want to start this conversation is, well, if you feel that, you know, I think this comes about for a lot of people as children when they go down their own financial journey, if you know. Like, so I'm going to hazard a guess and say that if you are not at all involved in your finances, you're probably not too stressed about what others around you are doing. But the more kind of control and plan you have around your own financial planning and what that looks like and your goals and your money mindset and other things like that, I think then you start to naturally look to those around you. And we feel like perhaps we've made a few judgments on other people that potentially we see as not doing as well as they could be, or we have some concerns about. And then we think about, okay, well, what can we do to help? And on this, I think the starting point would be, if you find yourself thinking about this, you really then need to dig down into like, what's your motivation? Because ultimately, and there's absolutely no judgment here either way, are you doing it for selfish or for selfless reasons? Because, and let's like maybe dig into that a little bit, because I think that's quite important. So, you know, doing it for selfless reasons would be truly because you are concerned about this other person, you want to make the most, you want them to have the most in the future. You know, you want to move them to a place of abundance and you want to make sure that they're really comfortable. Doing it for, say, slightly selfish reasons would be, and I would probably put myself in this category because I'm naturally this person, is seeing and doing some quick mental maths around like, oh, this family member of ours has this amount of money and I can see that they're probably going to need to stop work at this point and then they're going to have this sort of retirement and at some point we might have to help them, because what if they don't have enough money to fully support themselves and what does that look like? And of course, that's a selfish motivation because I want to make sure that if we're asked to help someone, or even if they don't ask and we offer to help someone, we're able to do that. So understanding what your motivation is really important in the first place, because I think that in itself will frame the conversation and how you go about talking to that person, right? And whether we like it or not, your intentions can very clearly come through in your conversation. So just being very aware of how you feel about it first before engaging in this discussion or even thinking about it. And then, you know, whether or not you have the responsibility to take on this kind of burden. And I think that's probably a good one maybe for you to talk to, Christine, because it's like you're younger than me and, you know, you're at a stage of your own financial journey that's still in full accumulation phase. And it's like, if you thought about having this conversation with someone, like, would you feel like you had the responsibility or ability to take it on?
Yeah, great question. I mean, where I'm at the moment, not really, is the reality of it, in that when I think about, let's say, supporting my mum through her retirement, it scares me a lot. And I don't know how I would even support her to get to that point or to like figure out whether that's going to be the case. But I know that this is a conversation that my sister has a lot with my mum, and that, and I, it's a very big motivator for Caroline in how she builds her wealth, is that she ultimately wants to get to a point where she wants to be able to support me and my mum because she thinks I will need support. And that's a big driving reason for her wanting to do the things that she does. And but she is also kind of, because of what she's seen from our mum, but I completely disagree with this, she has built this belief that she is going to need to support her and take on that burden without actually asking her. So I think there's there can be a lot wrapped in that as well, right? Is what you perceive versus what the reality is, because, you know, mum could have heaps of money stashed away here that we have no idea about. And, you know, and same with my dad. So I think that's one thing. But also going back to the selfish versus selfless, it's such an interesting idea because it's a like my mum and I often talk about it in that I, whenever she offers to give us gifts or, you know, buy us something or shout us some money because we haven't seen her in a while or whatever, I find myself saying, no, you keep the money yourself because I want you to be like comfortable, but also, you know, we only have one life. So don't hoard your money and then give it to me, spend it in this life. So, I mean, that's obviously a luxury, but.
No, and I think that's definitely important. I was just thinking as well, I'm like, we should probably highlight why this is relevant. And I think, you know, some people might be like, what do you mean? Of course, all of our parents are going to be fine in retirement. And there absolutely will be those people out there, particularly in New Zealand. But I think why it is of relevance to talk about it in a New Zealand context is, unlike Australia, superannuation in New Zealand, i.e. KiwiSaver, has not been around for anywhere near as long. So in Australia, superannuation scheme has been in existence for over 20 years. And as we know, things like employer contributions are a lot higher than they are for the KiwiSaver scheme in New Zealand. There's also been, for a really long time, more so in New Zealand than Australia, quite a generous government pension scheme. And there still is a very generous government pension scheme that is not means tested. In Australia, the government pension scheme is means tested. So what this means is if you have big means, i.e. you're a millionaire, you're not getting the government pension, unlike New Zealand. Sorry, people, but that's really fucked up. It's like, you know... The fact that you are over 60, well, you turn 65 and everyone in New Zealand is eligible for the government pension is not really, in my books, that fair. So, you know, pairing that with the fact that you look at any of the research from Te Ara Hanga Ora, which is New Zealand's retirement commission, and we know that Kiwis are rating themselves very low on the preparedness for retirement scale. So, you know, we gave ourselves a score overall of 43 out of 100, which is pretty bloody low. And most people, so looking at, say, reliance on New Zealand Super, which is the government pension scheme for retirement income, 27% of people said that they will be entirely reliant on that. That's all they're relying on for their retirement income. And only less than one third said that they were basically not really reliant at all. So the vast majority of people, even if they do have some retirement savings outside of New Zealand pension, are still significantly reliant on that as an income stream. So it is a concern, naturally. You know, cost of living in New Zealand, as we know, is very high. Property prices are very high. It is a topic of conversation that I guess warrants discussion, which is why we're talking about it today. So, if you've thought through, I guess, your motivation, why you're doing it, the next thing to think about is, are you the right person for the conversation? And I say this in the nicest possible way, to really look inward and think, am I going to be best placed to talk to whoever I'm thinking about talking to really be heard by them? And it's not so much about you, it's about how they best take on information and whether or not they're really going to listen to the person that's discussing it with them. I think this is super relevant for people that have siblings because, as you highlighted before, Christine, if someone is deemed the family CFO role or takes on a dynamic of being the person that talks about money without having any conversation with siblings around them, that could really put people offside and it might actually be more detrimental to the conversation in future as opposed to getting people on board. So, you know, if you have siblings and you're thinking about having this type of conversation with a parent, go chat to your siblings first. Raise your concerns with them. See if they have they've had the same thoughts. See if maybe they have had a discussion with your parent about this before. Chances are different. I mean, we all know that parents have favorite siblings, so different, whether they admit it or not, different topics of conversation will come up with different people. So, you know, perhaps your parents have said something in passing to one of your siblings or those sorts of things. And perhaps as well, there's siblings that just say, hey, actually, this is not my area of expertise. This is not where my comfort lies. I'm really happy for you to take the lead on this and go and have this conversation. But making sure that you're thinking about, yes, are you the right person and do I need to loop in others on this conversation? And I guess if you're not the right person, what should you do? Do you have any suggestions, Christine?
I actually just have a perfect example of this. So Ollie has two siblings, and an older sister and younger brother, and Ollie has been given the family CFO role because, you know, he's really good with money and his dad has always talked to him about it since he was young. But then his younger brother was given like the role of deciding which retirement village that they get put into. And that's because he's really empathetic and is perfect for that role, but he is not as strong in finance. And I can't remember what his sister got given, but that's an example of how it could play out, and that what are the strengths, and you know, are you the one deciding, or is it your parent deciding? Mm. You know, are they capable of deciding? Do they know, yeah, you know, well enough as well? I think that's something.
And that's a great point. If you have a chat to your siblings being like, hey, I think we should talk to mum or dad or whoever it might be about their retirement. You know, they're getting a bit older. Let's just generally have the chat about thinking around when they want to retire and what that kind of looks like. Maybe you then take it to your parent at that point in time and say, hey, we'd like to have this chat with you. Who do you best feel like, have you thought about it? You know, who do you best feel would be your most natural or comfortable person to discuss this with, because ultimately it's about them, it's not about you. So that's really important. And I think then the other thing, and we can touch on this a little bit later as well, is if you or none of you, if you have siblings, are the right person for the conversation, are there third parties that are entirely independent of the family dynamic that can be drawn in to either assist with the conversation or lead with the conversation? So the natural one would be, you know, a financial planner or a retirement planner. If it's something to do with like retirement specifically, potentially it could be a lawyer, particularly if you need to touch on things like, you know, getting wills set up, powers of attorney, and those sorts of really important documents that you want to talk about very early on, well before there's any kind of like health or other issue in the family. And then, you know, maybe it's an accountant. If your parents have an accountant that they've worked with for a really long time that would just have a base level of understanding of their current financial situation and could help kind of pose, just that like third party, unbiased point of view.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, actually, is to consider those external parties, but then also perhaps like wider family members, if they, you know, auntie or second cousin or whatever, yeah, if they are really an expert in that area.
Yeah, particularly if it's, you know, one of your parents' siblings that, you know, they've grown up with, is of the same age demographic as them, perhaps, you know, the message from them will be heard differently as opposed to the message that you're saying, even if it's the same message. So the next thing is, I think, just really highlighting the importance of having these discussions now and well in advance of this, you know, being at a time where that individual might be retiring or moving to a retirement village or downsizing, or, you know, before, like engaging in the conversation before whatever trigger point happens in their life, because you want to know what's important to them before having to help them make actual financial decisions, you know? So this is a conversation that I know they won't mind me sharing. We have really engaged with Luke's mum, who's, she's, you know, divorced. She's a single individual, preparing for her retirement by herself. And while she's currently still working, Luke and his sister have been really good at engaging in discussions with her around, you know, making sure that she's looking after her health. What does retirement look like? She's got a lot of grandchildren already, and she's probably going to have more in the future, you know, making sure she's not taking on too much. What would she like to do with her house? Where ideally would she like to retire? What does that kind of look like? You know, all of those sorts of conversations that perhaps are less around entire monetary outcomes and also a nice way to like ease into a financial conversation. Or, you know, if you're saying to someone, oh, hey, you know, mum, when would you actually like to finish work? Or, you know, you seem to be, you love spending time with the grandkids and they love spending time with you. You know, have you thought about transitioning to part-time work? That's a really nice way to open, help open up for that other person to potentially then share with you that they haven't thought about part-time work because they're concerned about if they're going to have enough money, or they have thought about part-time work, but maybe they just really love working. You know, it's a nice way rather than saying, coming in hot and being like, do you have enough money to retire? When are you going to retire? Like, when are you going to sell your house? What's going to happen? So, starting conversations early and softly, and then understanding what's important to them. And the thing that I would really highlight on here, and I know, Christine, you'll be all over this, is coming in a way that is understanding and empathetic, because there is a lot of shame, I think, around this. And there's obviously a challenging dynamic as well, where your parents might think you're engaging in this conversation with them because they believe you think they're not doing okay. And potentially they're worried about being a burden. Perhaps this has weighed on their minds more than they've let on to you. You know, really trying to put yourself in their shoes first and understanding how you can best communicate what you're concerned about in a way that also appreciates what they might be thinking in that point in time.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like that's such a hard conversation to have, but also very true, and the shame around it. What I would say to that is, how can you approach it from a place of love? And I think there's no way then that could possibly go wrong if it's pure, I want to help you, or, you know, I'm asking because I genuinely care about you, not because I think you're a failure or you're incapable or you're less than or not worthy of, or whatever the story is that you might bring to it. But I also think it's probably really important to just like check yourself before you walk into that conversation.
To be 100%.
What
assumptions are you going in with? And potentially, like, how are you saying things in a way that are coming across differently to how you assume they are? And I have a great example of this. So, you know, Luke's had lots of different conversations with his mum about money over probably the past 5 years. He's been a lot more engaged in talking to her about it, and they now, I think, I would hope, enjoy talking about it a lot more now than say they did at the start. But, you know, respectfully to him, he probably came at it in some, you know, not the best ways initially, and kind of prickled his mum a little bit on it, which is totally fair enough. And I know one of the things she came back on was like, I've survived my whole life and raised two kids on a single income. Like, I'm doing fine, thank you. I've done plenty, you know, before you came along and decided to start trying to help me. So what are you doing here? And that is completely valid. You know, that is 100% how she feels. And, you know, having someone come in and being like, hi, I see that, you know, sure, you've done really well for the past like 50 years managing your own money, but I think as your expert child, you could be doing better. So, you know, not coming in like that and having the conversation and being, you know, well, acknowledging what they have done well, right? That is as important. And maybe a way to come into it is being like, I understand that you have done this, which has been very impressive. You know, you've got a home, you've started saving it for your retirement, you've managed these challenges along your life. One of the things that we haven't talked about, however, is what you want to do in the future. And I just want to engage in that conversation with you to see what your retirement plan looks like and if there's anything that I can help you with, because you're going to get older and I want to help support you and make sure that you're having a really nice retirement, and I'd like to talk to you about that.
If you came at me like that, I'd be like, oh, yes, here's all my numbers.
I feel like it's so easy for me to say this on the show, though, to you, and it's a lot harder to actually have that same kind of level-headed conversation with your parents, potentially. And that's why I think it's worthwhile thinking about this a lot before you engage in the conversation. And then the other thing I noted on this point is also being persistent, because it may absolutely be the case that the message doesn't get through to them first time round, and that's totally fine. And on the persistence thing, you know, this is conversations that Luke's been engaging with his mum on for the last 5 years, and now they're in a really good place where they can talk about it really openly. But of course, you know, it took some time for them to get there.
Yeah, definitely. I think the being persistent thing also really applies to the checking yourself and just like the stories, right? Of like, okay, so, you know, this first conversation didn't go that well, but I'm going to be persistent and keep trying, but yes, show up differently next time or ask different questions or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Particularly 100%. Because I think we get so triggered by family as well. You know, we know them so well, or we think we know them so well because they're the people we've known the longest, but you know, people change as well. That's something to be conscious of like, you know, their dreams or current reality might change.
And there's plenty of things that no matter how well you think you know your parents, you don't know everything about their lives and everything about their lived experience, particularly with money when they grew up. So, you know, just keeping yourself in check that you're not an expert about them. You may be an expert about money or like feel like an expert about money, but you're not an expert about the person that you're talking to. So, giving them space to show up in the way that is helpful for them as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So then I guess my last point is thinking about realities versus dreams. And this might be like, what are you talking about, Kat? But I wanted to highlight this because your vision of what you think your parents' retirement should look like is possibly different to the reality of what they think their retirement should look like. And one of the things we talk about often at work is there's a ton of numbers bandied about out there around how much money people should have for retirement and what you need for a comfortable retirement. And the reality is that actually you don't need that much money. You know, you can see some pretty big numbers, like you need $500,000 as a minimum in liquid assets to retire. And being very frank, not a lot of Kiwis are going to get there. So just being realistic around, you know, particularly if you've been going down a very deep rabbit hole of, say, barefoot investor journey and like, you know, getting your own money sorted and you have really big ambitious goals, making sure that you're not taking your ambitious dreams and putting them onto someone else. So being realistic about what's the starting point for the family member that you're talking around, and then also making sure that you're working towards the reality that is relevant for them, even if that means letting go of some of your own dreams. And one perfect example about this that we have talked about before is things like the family home. So when it comes time to a parent moving out of the family home, having conversations in advance, because there's so many emotional ties for everyone, children can often be conflicted around selling the family home. But the reality is for many people, in particularly Auckland, selling the family home, downsizing or moving into a retirement village will be part of their retirement plan. So making sure that you're focused on the reality for your parents and not the potential dream for yourself, which might be, oh, I'd love to keep the family home. And, you know, things even apply to the batch, would love to keep the family batch. But if it's not workable, then, you know, being realistic around what's best for them and putting aside what may be best for you.
I think also on that, if you flip it and think, you know, perhaps your parents, their dream is to hold on and kind of to that home and live in that for the rest of their life and have that be the place that perhaps they go out in. Whereas, you know, presenting lovingly the reality of needing to downsize can probably be something that would happen a lot, but also that would be quite a challenge in that. Yeah, being that objective voice. So how do you do that in a soft way?
Yeah. And I think on that, flipping it and the dream thing as well, one thing that just comes to mind is, you know, a lot of people have the natural instinct to want to give to their children, right? You know, to want to, whether it's in an inheritance or give them things to help them whilst they are alive. And as you alluded to before, sometimes the natural instinct as the recipient is to say, no, thank you. Can you please keep that for yourself? Because I'd really like you to enjoy that. So having conversations with them as well around the fact that if they're holding on to a dream that A, may not be important to you, you know, i.e. inheriting a family home, or B, you realize may not be realistic, just telling people that to give them the freedom so that they're not tied to that dream and it's kind of skewing all their other financial decisions.
Yeah, definitely. And just on that point, I did have this conversation with mum where, you know, she would be like, oh, here's a present or whatever. And I said to her, I don't want you to keep giving me these presents because I want you to be secure in retirement. And what she came back was, I'm going to be fine. Like, you need to not worry about me because I've done the numbers and it's okay. So, you know, they might surprise you, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And sometimes as well, it's like, you know, pick your battles. don't fight on everything. But yeah, I guess to kind of wrap up, one of the things that I just wanted to end on was, if you're listening to this episode in your 20s, 30s, 40s and thinking, okay, how could maybe I prepare my family either now or in the future for having the same conversation with me? I think it's all around instilling good financial behaviors in your kids so that you can have really open conversations going forward. So Christine, did you have a couple of points that either of things that your family did well for you or you wish they had done in terms of instilling good behaviors?
Yeah, that's a good one. I will start with things that I wish that were done. And I think the first one is having open conversations about money from the get-go. So, you know, not waiting until now to be like, okay, well, how, what's their retirement going to look like? Or, you know, do you even know how to invest? So perhaps instilling those a little bit earlier, but in a positive, abundant mindset way, rather than it being like a stressful money is hard to earn kind of thing.
Yeah.
But then on the flip side, good behaviors, living in the now, I think, you know, and that applies to the retirement and, or, you know, we work so hard to build up this money for retirement and there's a part of it that needs to be spent in retirement and, you know, enjoy it while you have it rather than just be so fixated on creating generational wealth, if that makes sense.
Definitely. Yeah. I would say that mine probably are, I think, one thing my parents did very well is they had very good intentions of engaging us early into like the financial information. So, you know, when I was 18 and my brother was 14, 15, like getting us involved in their superannuation fund and making sure that our first job savings were going for retirement and kind of instilling that behavior was really good. But then probably the extension that they didn't really continue with was continuing on the open conversations of what does that mean as you transition through different phases of life. And perhaps, you know, on fair reflection to them, it's probably because at that point in time, they hadn't been retired. They didn't know what retirement looked like. You know, their parents had very different retirements and kind of working lives than say they did. And so living that experience was really what gave them the information as opposed to being able to like actively talk to us about it. And then I think the other thing, I guess, on then instilling good behaviors in your kids and how you can have good conversations is recently I had a really nice conversation with my mum where she was opening up about some like financial related matters with her and dad. And rather than just jumping down her throat and being like asking the direct question that I wanted to ask, the first question that I asked was, can I ask if you would give me the like, can I ask about the details around that? Or it was almost like that permission question of, can I ask you about this? Or can I ask you a few more questions on that topic? And gave her permission to say, yes, you can, before just diving into the conversation. And I think that's probably a good thing for both you as a parent. I mean, not that I am a parent, but, you know, instill like having that kind of conversation with your kids around, can we have a discussion around this? You know, making sure that everyone is in a space to discuss financial matters rather than just jumping into the topic.
I think that's, I'm going to take that on. I'll go straight to the, how much money do you have?
I just, you know, because more often than not, people won't say no, but I think it's just that nice way to lead into a conversation and make sure that everyone at that point in time is in an emotional place where they're prepared to talk about it. And if they're not, maybe they'll say, hey, not right now, but next time we have a phone conversation, or I'll send you an email about it kind of thing.
Or when I'm in a better like headspace.
Yeah, like it's you know, this thing just happened. I don't feel comfortable talking about it right now. I'd rather just go cheer myself up. So you know, can we talk about it next week? That kind of thing. But yes. I feel like this is a really tricky topic because there's no kind of right or wrong. And obviously everyone's experience in this regard is so deeply personal, but I think a lot of it just comes down to having really good communication. And as I think you listening to the show have probably alluded, a lot of internal self-reflection about yourself before you start engaging in this kind of conversation with others.
Yeah, definitely. Self-awareness for the win.
Self-awareness 101. I feel like it's hard enough to have self-awareness and then like act on the self-awareness.
Yep. Yeah. Taking action versus internalizing the knowledge, right?
Yeah. Exactly. But to wrap up, I did want to mention a couple of resources because obviously diving into a conversation with someone is a very big step. And if you are not yet at that step and you want to have potentially an easier lead in to kind of open the gates with someone and see how prepared they are to like talk about this, there's some amazing resources at Tiara Ahunga Ora, the NZ Retirement Commission that we talked about earlier. And they have some really cool research. And I think potentially sharing research with those around you could be really helpful to help contextualize why your whānau should care about this and why you're having the conversation about it. Sorted NZ also have a really great guide on preparing for retirement that you could potentially, you know, email to family and say, hey, have you seen this thing? They talk about things like downsizing your home, what it would look like to move into a retirement village, how you should think about funding your retirement, working part-time, you know, options for people working beyond 65, all sorts of different stuff that, let's be honest, we don't have personal lived experience in yet. So giving them that sort of information first could definitely be helpful. And then, as we mentioned, seeking out a financial advisor, a lawyer or accountant, if you need support from a third party.
Love it. Love those resources.
Oh, yeah. Love them. Love them. Well done, NZ, for like, getting some great free resource out there. Love that for us.
Definitely.
Love that for us. But yeah, we will link to all of those in the show notes and also at our website. So you can head to itsnosecret.co.nz/29. I was like, 29? itsnosecret.co.nz/29. And if you have any questions on this topic, because I'd love to hear some experiences, obviously, you know, anonymously, we don't share them on the pod, because, yeah, I feel like there's lots that I can still learn here as well.
Same here, same here. And any experience for anyone as the family appointed CFO.
Definitely. Love to hear from you guys. Yeah. Thanks for joining us, team, and see you next Tuesday.
Bye.